What I want to do is I want to introduce myself. I'm Justin Podur. I write mostly for a website called ZNet, or I've written for Z Magazine. I got involved in Palestine work, basically starting with the only with the Second Intifada, and I just started following things as a kind of an editor at ZNet, and eventually I went to the occupied territories in 2002 with a group called the International Solidarity Movement, and I've pretty recently gotten involved in CAIA, which I'll tell you what the acronym means because I don't want to just use acronyms as if everyone knows with the Coalition Against Israeli Apartheid. So what I want to do, though, is I just want to talk. I mean, Rahul talked about this frame of terrorism. I wanted to talk about these issues of framing. I wanted to ask, how many people saw the Hothouse documentary and the debate about it? So, okay, quite a few. How many people were actually there? I saw someone here who was there. Okay, so a couple... The documentary was called Hot Hell. What's the show called? The Big Picture. It was on. It aired on Wednesday, October 4th at 10 o'clock. It's on again tomorrow. So try to catch it. I'm going to talk a bit about it here. So if you can catch it tomorrow, if you haven't already. I want to talk about that, and I think that was a really good example of how these things get framed. Our people were there. There were quite a lot of us there. I wasn't there, but quite a lot of CAIA members were there. CAIA people were on the panel, as were some rather thuggish pro-Israel people and some more liberal pro-Israel people. And I'm going to talk about these different frames, and then I want to sort of make some connections with what Kristen was saying. About the alternative media.
Yeah,
so,
can I interrupt for a second just to say that somebody was here who was actually a panelist?
Right, Ahmed was a panelist. He was speaking actually from the perspective of a prisoner, having been a prisoner himself in Israeli prisons, and added a grounding in reality and for a debate and a discussion that had a tendency to stray from reality more than once. Thank you, Ahmed, for coming to this, and thank you for being there as well. Rahul, I think, summed it up about the mainstream media. They're somewhat biased. I normally get asked to talk about the media from time to time. I normally give this whole discussion that Chomsky and Herman have about the filters, corporate ownership, and shared ideology, the fact that they rely on official sources, and the fact that there's this flack, there's this whole machinery in place to accuse journalists, attack them personally, organize letter-writing campaigns, and so on, against people who report anything that might be slightly, might have some relationship to reality, I would say, or might, in their eyes, be pro-Palestinian or anti-Israel. I'm not going to get into that whole discussion. I think we can if that's what people are into when we get there in about 10 minutes. But we know there was an earlier panel about the way that support for Israel is organized and funded in this country. There's plenty more research where that came from. We know that some of the main advocates of Israel in this country are owners of major media corporations. CanWest is the most stark example, but the other networks are not exceptional either. I taught at Ryerson's Journalism School for a couple of years, and I saw how journalists are prepared in this country, and they're prepared to do a very narrow technical thing. They learn how to write, and they'll write in service of whatever they're told to write about. So when I was their instructor and I was telling them to be critical. They said, yes, we will be critical. How should we be critical? Tell us how to be critical. And I told them how, and they did it. But you know, then I was gone, and they were off to their next class. And when they work for Izzy Asper, or I mean, well, the Asper family, or the Toronto Star, or whoever, they're going to do what they're told, because that's how the system works. But I think, how many people were at the press conference on Friday? No, I don't think anybody was from here. I was at the press conference on Friday. It was at 10:30. We had announced it. I know that someone in this room did a tremendous amount of work ensuring that the press knew about it. There's not really any plausible deniability for any media in the city to say that they didn't know that there was a press conference on Friday morning with Salim Vali from South Africa, with Jamal Juma from the occupied territories. And the press conference was remarkable. The talks were very good. The analysis was very interesting. There was one component missing, the press. They didn't come. Other than that, it was great. But it was actually really telling, because the absence of the press, I think, says something. And I don't necessarily think it's that they're all horribly racist. I think, of course, some of them are, and there's the system that's in place. But the ones who are not are afraid. And they're afraid of the flack, and they're afraid for their jobs, and they're afraid of their bosses, and they're afraid of their editors. And so what are we supposed to do in such a situation? We have these ideas. We have to communicate them. And that's what I think this media panel is fundamentally about. Rahul talked about some of these ideas that it's important to get out there. We have to get this message about democracy. We have to get this. We have to challenge the idea that intent is the only thing that matters, and maybe we should look at the effects, the demonization, this idea of collateral damage. So we have to get these ideas out. So how are we going to get them out, and what do we face when we try to get them out? Okay. And I think that there are four ways that this issue is framed. And Rahul talked enough about the terrorism one that I don't feel I have to elaborate very much. Palestinians are dehumanized. Attacks by Palestinians are emphasized. If you watch this show, if you watch this debate, you'll hear the pro-Israel people, the Canada Israel Committee fellow Moshe Ronan, talk about it was always about the buses. Israelis want to live in a state where buses don't get blown up. Israelis want to live in a state where pizzerias don't get blown up. So there's always this emphasis on these attacks. They want to destroy. So there's certain key, and so this is one frame, this terrorism frame. And there's certain keywords, buzzwords, that are associated with each frame. I would say with this one, there's terrorists, they want to destroy Israel, and the key thing, and this Canada-Israel committee was a real exemplar of this, was, do you recognize Israel? They need to recognize Israel. Are you willing to recognize Israel's right to exist? Does Israel have a right to exist, or doesn't it? And that's one of the refrains of this first frame of terrorism. There's no one to talk to, we don't negotiate with terrorists, and that's what I would call frame number one. Okay, frame number two is that there's a conflict. And frame number two in this show, again, for those of you who watched it or can watch it, was represented, I think, by the filmmaker to some extent, a fellow named Eric, don't remember his last name. Eric Bernstein, right? And then also a guy named M.J. Rosenberg from a Washington lobby group. And Rosenberg was kind of a liberal. And the idea here was that there's a conflict, there's two sides, they have trouble getting along, and there's all this explosive extremism on both sides, and we need to just calm things down, we need to have a solution where everybody's happy, and Rosenberg had a really compelling, kind of beautiful quote, and he said, he said, there's going to be a solution, it's going to be two states, and it's going to be on the 1967 borders, and the only question is, how many innocent people are going to die on both sides before that solution comes to pass. And when he said that, there was a lot of applause. And I think that this this view, this particular narrative, I mean, I understand Rahul wanted to talk about the terrorism narrative, and that's where Canadian politicians and elites would like to go. This is where they're trying to get things. This is the world that Harper lives in. Harper lives in what I would call frame one. Most Canadians, I think, live in this frame. Most Canadians live in frame two. Most Canadians think, well, there's these people over there in the Middle East. They're crazy. They fight over land. God knows what's going on, but, you know, it's the Holy Land. I don't know. It's Jerusalem. There's never any peace there for thousands of years. And they've got this whole ancient hatreds. Everybody's got to calm down and get along. And Canada, being we're this place where everybody knows how to get along. It's such a diverse place. There's this French people and these English people, and they got along. The two founding peoples who came here to this empty land where nobody was and managed to get along. We can help these people over there. We can help them get along, maybe. So I think that's where a lot of Canadians live. It's a very comfortable frame. And when we face this frame, there's some room to maneuver. There's very little room to maneuver in this terrorist frame. We can try to turn it around and say, well, you guys are the real terrorists. In this second frame, there's a little bit of room. There's room to try to point out that there's a disparity. There's room to say, okay, fine, there's deaths on both sides. There's four times as many deaths on one side as the other. There's prisoners on both sides. There's 10,000 prisoners on one side and three prisoners of war on the other side. And so pointing out the disparities, I think, is important. Pointing out that the ideas of this generous offer, because the key line in this historically is that Israel made this generous offer that was rejected by the Palestinians. I think this has been dealt with. I think Kaya people are pretty good at dealing with this argument. The third frame, and I think the third frame is a frame that our allies, a lot of really good allies, have. This is the frame, this is the world that I lived in until pretty recently, and it's occupation world. Everybody who was at Rafif's talk yesterday, those of us who lived in occupation world, those of us who lived in frame three might have felt a little scolded yesterday. And here, this is occupation world, or frame three, was exemplified, I think, by Norman Finkelstein on the show yesterday. So Finkelstein is an excellent debater. He's got an excellent hold of the facts, and he says, look, this Israel is in violation of international law. There's mountains of documentation about the human rights situation. There's no parity between the two sides. Israel is the one that's rejected. The documentary record is clear. The factual record is clear. There's no way to argue that this is a two-sided conflict. There's no way to argue that the Palestinians are terrorists when you look at the whole context. And the whole framing of it is wrong. These are good people who live. This is where I used to live, so I have to think they're good people. These are good people who live in this frame, and I think that we should relate to them as allies. And I think that in this frame, the reason that I eventually left this frame was because this frame, and Finkelstein made this point on the show, he also ends up saying, you know, it's a two-state solution. Israel and Palestine will live alongside each other. All the whole world agrees with it. The Palestinians agree with it. Palestinians are willing to recognize Israel. It's just that Israel and the United States reject it. The reason that this, I think, you know, the reason that, I've tried to argue this with Finkelstein, there's two problems. One of the problems is that I think that at this stage, this thing that we have, this what we've been calling Bantustans, is what they have in mind for a two-state solution. They've never had anything else in mind, and what is it? How is it going to happen? Are they going to allow I mean, the questions of the basic questions of freedom of movement, the basic questions of sovereignty, the idea, the questions of an independent economy, all of these things have been so systematically destroyed that it just seems that we've come to a point where asking or arguing for that as such a minimalist position it just seems undignified in some ways. It seems sort of it's not what you want to take to the table as your starting position. You don't want to say, I'm willing to give up all of these things. I'm willing to give up my principles. It's like Rahul was saying about they want Palestinians to bend at the knee before they even come to the conversation. So give up the right of return, recognize Israel, ask for 22% of your land, and maybe you'll get some fraction of that. So that's one problem. But the other problem, I think, comes from the framing itself. In other words, pointing out disparities, pointing out the exposures of human rights violations, if people are living in frame two or in frame one, those arguments will just fall flat. And you'll hear this from a lot of the people if you watch the show. A lot of the things that people said, even when Avi Lewis was Avi Lewis had a bit of a confrontation with Adam Haniyeh, who's going to be speaking at a plenary session tomorrow. And he said, they were arguing, Adam was saying, well, who are the real terrorists given the disparities in casualties? Israel has killed two people a day, every single day, for the past 6 years, two Palestinians a day on average. The Israeli government is full of war criminals. Who's the real terrorist here? How can you call Palestinians terrorists? And Avi said, well, so you just want to take the label terrorist and apply it to the other side. And Adam said, well, no, you can't compare the two situations. Avi said, oh, so you're, because of the disparity. And Avi said, oh, so you're just measuring terrorism by quantity? And that was a kind of a rhetorical question, but I thought that was I think that's a fair way to start. I mean, if there are huge disparities, that usually tells you something about the dynamics of the situation. But Adam's answer, I thought, was even more revealing, because Adam said, no, it's not a question solely of disparities, it's cause and effect. And that idea of cause and effect, I think, takes us to frame four, which is the frame that, obviously, those of us in Kaya live in now, which is that Israel is an apartheid state and that this is based on racism. And we have a mountain of evidence for that. We have the wall, we have the pass system, we have the marriage laws, we have the contempt for human rights and for international law. And this leads also to the strategic direction, to international isolation, to BDS campaigns. And it also helps, and I think the reason that this frame is so compelling is that that racism is a special affront. I mean, beyond body counts, the body counts never tell the whole story, right? When you're talking about systematic racism, there's just something about that that bothers people, and that's something that you can build a campaign around internationally. And that was part of the power of the anti-apartheid campaign for South Africa. And I think I also think that that's part of the power of the anti-Semitism slur. The power of the anti-Semitism slur isn't just that the Holocaust numbers were high. It's that this history of racism, and that racism against some group of people is such a unacceptable notion. People don't want to be called racists, and that's why it's so powerful. And that's why they want to use it against us. That's why they want to hurl it against us. Having the apartheid analysis and having that frame of reference is a very strong way of dealing with that and of building a campaign. So we live in frame four. We live in this anti-apartheid analysis, and we want other people to live there as well. We want to get other people to that point. So I think what we need from our media campaign as a group here in the city, internationally, nationally, any scale you want to look at, I think that as we move forward from this, from these seeds that we have, we need people who can relate day-to-day events to an analysis that's based on apartheid. I mean, there are writers and there are pundits who are really good, who live in frames 2 and 3. The alternative media, the site that I work for, ZNet, is basically really smart, really good people writing in frame 3, writing in this occupation frame. You have Uri Avneri, who we publish all the time, who's with Gush Shalom. We publish Finkelstein all the time. We publish someone who Rafif referred to as an important pundit whose name starts with the letter C. I mean, Chomsky lives in frame 3. I love him. You know, I've learned so much. I owe him a lot. He lives in frame 3. And we need people who can do this kind of stuff in frame 4. We also need people to monitor the media. We need people to do media analysis. We need people to pressure the media. We can learn something from the other side in that regard. The other side works through vast resources, through the fact that the media owners and editors share their racist ideology. They also work through organization, and they also work through creating fear in journalists and others who cover things the way they don't like, in ways that they don't like. And we can do that. We can organize. We can impose costs on racist coverage in the media if we can get it together to do that. And then we of course have to present our anti-apartheid analysis and framework in every space that we get, including the mainstream ones. And there were some people in Kaya who were wondering whether we should bother going to debates like the one that happened on The Big Picture. And after I watched it, I thought we should. After I heard from people about it, I wasn't sure. But when I saw the final product, I thought, okay, even if there was 40 minutes of blather, and it may not have been 40 minutes, but there was, even though there was quite a lot of blather, there was 5 or 10 minutes of stuff that never gets on TV. And you can testify to what the landscape is like, what it would be like to whether Kaya people would get on TV in the States for that kind of debate. So we should get into all of those spaces. So we need people to work on this. I've got a list going around. If you want to work on this, we'll get in touch with you, and we'll try to get this. We'll try to set up some actual infrastructure so that people who want to work on these things can. The last thing I want to say is that we are a grassroots group. We're small. We're just getting going on this stuff, and we've already talked about the mainstream media. We're not using the alternative media the way that we can. Kristen just told you all the things that we could do on the community radio. We don't have a regular pundits writing analysis on ZNet who are writing on Palestine issues from this anti-apartheid analysis. We don't. And so on. And so if we could get a lot of good practice, we could really flex our muscles using our own media that are totally open to us and that would be happy to do it, and develop our messages and develop our ideas and develop ourselves and our strengths. And once we get to the point where we're that good and there's lots of us doing that, the mainstream won't be able to ignore us. And if they do, they'll just miss the point like they always do. And it won't matter, because we'll be solid enough that they can't stop us.